live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend before Thanksgiving, wherever you happen to be. Of course, last week we were in Bermuda. We crisscrossed the world about two times since then. Went from the Atlantic all the way out to the Pacific. And now we've turned right back around. And let me tell you where we're coming from. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 18 degrees, 15 minutes north. 77 degrees, 30 minutes west. We are coming to you from Jamaica at the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And you know the drill. If you can't get through on the phones, email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. So much stuff in the news this week, and if you've been watching the CBS Evening News last week, you saw my special exclusive report, my interview with Mexican President Felipe Calderon, first time he sat down and talked to a U.S. network in a long time, about the situation there, the violence, the killings at the border crossings and the border towns, and of course what that means to us as travelers. And it was a remarkable time with him. We were down there for 2 days with him. I was flying with him in his helicopter with his army troops, looking at live fire exercises, meeting with family members of army soldiers who were killed during the drug wars. Think about this. 28,000 people have been killed in the last 4 years since Calderon took office and declared war on the cartels. That number is growing. He took me inside his secret underground bunker that no one's ever seen. It's a $100 million facility where there's 600 people working 24 hours a day, heavily fortified. They've literally wired the nation, 900 data points, everything using satellite technology, even Google, everything you can imagine to try to figure out what's going on and where. They've had some successes with that. In fact, the day we were there, Mexican army troops in a very bloody shootout actually captured and killed a number of cartel members, including one of the big kingpins named, I love this guy's name, Tony Tormenta. Sounds like a bad cartoon character, but there's nothing funny about it. Now, having said that, it's time to put all of this in perspective. And one of the things we reported on the CBS Evening News Report, which, by the way, you can access by going to cbsnews.com and punching in my name, you'll see the entire six-minute interview, plus other stuff that we didn't air on the air, his talks about immigration and gun control. But one of the interesting things about the interview that I think will surprise you is that despite all of this, despite everything that's going on in places like Ciudad Juarez and Nuevo Laredo, places where it really is bad news. Tourism to Mexico, are you sitting down? It's up 20%, and that up over last year, and that includes 5 million Americans. And those are 5 million evolved Americans. It's time to get smart, boys and girls. Get a map. The distance between Tijuana and Cancun is roughly the same distance as the distance between Los Angeles and New York. Mexico is a huge country, and a lot of this violence has been isolated. It's Mexicans against Mexicans. Tourists are not targeted. And the numbers speak very, very highly. And when you think about what's going on in Mexico, they really can't cut a break. They had the swine flu scare. They had an earthquake at one point. Of course, they had an economic crisis. They've even lost an airline over this, Mexicana, although they may be coming back. And last but not least, of course, is the drug wars. Does it stop me from going to Mexico? Absolutely not. In fact, we've done our radio show from there this year four times and had a great time. Remember, there's a reason why 5 million Americans are going and the tourism is up 20%, because somebody got smart. Now, the real tough news is, as the president himself told me, he can't stop the path he's on. Once he declared the war, he's got to see it through. He's got another 2 years in office because Mexican presidents are term limited. And he has his legacy and his history and his own personal sense of history to think about. And what he said to me was, look, it's going to take more time. It's going to take more money, and sadly, it's going to take more lives before we win this thing, but we will win it. Now, one of his big problems, and many of you listening to the show may disagree with me, but think about this number. On the border between Mexico, Arizona, and Texas alone, there are, on the exact border, there are more than 7,000 federal firearms licensees, otherwise known as gun shops. And there's a reason why they're on the border, because they're selling every known weapon to man that's going across the border. We're not talking about little 38 caliber pistols. We're talking about assault rifles, AR-15s, submachine guns, AK-47s. The Mexican authorities have seized more than 90,000 weapons, which the president showed me. We actually had that on the air. You should see some of those weapons. And every one of them was bought in the United States. Every single one of them. And how are they buying them? Because our gun laws are so terrible. Anybody can walk into a gun store that does not have or who does not have a criminal record and wait the appropriate time and buy the gun. So the drug cartels got smart. They're using proxies. They're using people who don't have criminal records to go in there and buy the guns. The next thing you know, they buy the guns and they go across the border. It is as simple and as devastating as that. So if you get a chance, go to CBSNews.com, look at our interview with the president, and then get your smart hat on and realize that there should be nothing stopping you from going to Mexico other than getting a map and realizing where you want to go, and you'll have a great time. In the law of supply and demand, the Greenberg rule of thumb is this. You always want to go to a location after they've had a civil disturbance or a natural disaster. Why? Because, first of all, they will be thrilled to have you. Second of all the other scared Americans won't be there. How about that for a benefit? And third of all, you'll get better service, better deals, and bottom line, a much better experience. So that's my advice to you on that. And the real bottom line here is it doesn't just apply to Mexico. It applies to Thailand. It applies to where we are right now in Jamaica. You know, are there certain places in Jamaica I wouldn't go right now for a holiday? Yes, there are. Would I vacation in Spanish Town tonight? Probably not. All right, we've done it now. Would I go anywhere else in Jamaica? Yeah. And I do it all the time. This is probably our fifth show this year from Jamaica. We love this place. You have to just get real and realize that there are places in Cleveland I wouldn't go late at night. You know, any place east of the Cuyahoga River, good luck. I wrote about it in my book. And the people in Cleveland got mad at me. They said, you told people not to go to Cleveland. I said, no. I said, don't go east of the Cuyahoga River. You know, there's North Charleston, South Carolina. Not a good place to go in terms of crime rate. It doesn't stop me from going to Charleston. So get real, guys. If you have a riot in Cincinnati, it doesn't mean you can't go to Cleveland and vice versa. So bottom line here is, if we're going to make a New Year's resolution even in November, that would be to get smarter about the way of the world and get a map and realize what's really out there for us where we're not in danger. The one statistic I will share with you, and it's a big one, how many American civilians have been killed since 1988 by acts of political violence and terrorism? Are you ready? It's under 750. That's it. And that even includes Pan Am 103, in which more than 170 Americans died. Now let's put this figure on for size. Every week in this country, nearly 900 of our fellow citizens are either seriously injured or killed in accidents in their own bathtubs. So when somebody says to me, I don't want to go there, it's not safe, I'm going to stay home, I have the best possible answer I can give them. That's okay with me, but if you want to take a bath, boys and girls, you are on your own. All right, put that in your hat and smoke it, as they would say. In any case, when we come back, more on all the TSA craziness out there, and you know it's crazy with our good pal, Scott McCartney from the Wall Street Journal. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Jewel in Dunn's River in Jamaica, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. As we predicted at the beginning of the show, you know, it's madness. Of course, there's a reason why they made the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's for this coming Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, the suicidal day when more people usually travel than any other day of the year. Why they do that, I have no idea why, because Let's face it, I've said it once, I'll say it again. It's a dysfunctional, obligatory family get-together. You got to go see your demented uncle, your crazy aunt, so they can push all your emotional buttons, and you have to pay more for it, and you have to wait in line for it. Oh, my God, talk about abuse on so many different levels. And, of course, anytime we talk about abuse on that many levels, we bring in our expert from the Wall Street Journal, Scott McCartney. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Peter.
Did you like that intro?
Love that intro. More abuse for Scott. That's great.
More abuse explained by Scott.
Yes.
Well, let's start out with the obvious craziness, because it just keeps on mushrooming every day. The new procedures and the screening machines, and of course the excess pat down procedures by the TSA.
And I think the two are really closely tied. I think Thanksgiving could be a huge problem with TSA and the. And the new procedures, people aren't familiar with it. People are upset about it. When your grandmother has somebody run her hand inside the waistband of the pants, it's just going to be a bad scene all around. And I think we could see some long delays because of the TSA procedures.
Well, you know, the original plan, this goes back to the underwear bomber of last Christmas. You know, the guy got through two security checkpoints, one in Africa, one in Amsterdam, essentially wearing all the ingredients of the bomb and not detected. So we understand why these machines are coming online. The original plan was to have all of these machines in place at 2,200 security checkpoints at 450 commercial airports around the country. They're not all online at all these airports. Some airports have some of them, but not all of them. So some have like half magnetometers, the old school machines, and the other half have the screening machines. What a time to put them in place right before the busiest travel day of the year.
Yeah, it really is. And the pat-down procedure coming in November 1st going with that, it's, in some ways, I think it is sort of the result of putting a new chief at TSA in July, and takes several months to, you know, get things the way he wants. And I think this is something he saw the vulnerability. People were getting through the tests that the government agents do with, you know, things hidden, and so they decided they had to go with stricter pat-downs. It may be that they're concerned about the holiday season this year with attempts, and so they feel like they need to do it now.
Well, you know, nobody's opposed to great airport security, and I understand why they're doing it. If people are getting through undetected, well, that's a big problem. But we have to deal with a little bit more finesse here, don't you think? I mean, I know the TSA has a massive PR problem on their hands right now.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I was actually talking to a senior guy at Southwest Airlines about their Thanksgiving plans, and he flat out said customers are getting partially molested. Airlines are upset about this. Travelers are upset about this. It's a huge PR mess. I think part of it they brought on themselves. They didn't do any explanation of the change, of why they were doing it, of when they were doing it. There just has to be a better way. Everybody keeps saying there has to be a better way. And I think that's right. There's got to be something better than what's going on right now.
Well, let's break this down into four separate issues. There's the privacy issue and the invasion of personal space issue. That's one. There are some health and radiation potential issues that have not been fully explained to people's satisfaction. Then there's the process itself in terms of how long it's going to take. And then there's number four that people are just beginning to realize, even the TSA has finally woken up to it, and that's children. You know, if you're a parent and you're trying to be a responsible parent, you spent a considerable amount of time, if you've been a responsible parent, talking to your child about not letting strangers approach them, not letting strangers touch them, and all of a sudden, whoops, here comes this big machine, and you got to do what they say.
Yeah, now they did do kind of a quick dance on that, and there's a new procedure for children 12 and under in terms of the pat-down, They've tried to be responsive on that, but even, you know, the thought of a 8-year-old kid getting a pat down at the airport is really tough.
Here's what I suggest. I suggest they just hire birthday clowns. No? Okay.
Yeah.
For the kids anyway. No, you don't like that idea?
From TSA parent, you know, from their standpoint, it's really tough if you exempt one particular type of traveler then you've created the vulnerability. The guy who got on a plane bound for Canada and dressed like an old man with a very convincing disguise and took off the mask in the bathroom in flight. It just shows you. I mean, people say, why are we frisking, grandma and grandpa? And the reason is, well, if you don't, then the bad guys are going to dress up like grandma and grandpa.
Well, you know what it is, and they're right. I mean, the terrorists have traditionally gone for the path of least resistance, and you're right, you can't exempt one group. But then you got the pilots angry because of potential radiation problems, and we know, because we're going to take the TSA at their word, that the actual dose of radiation that you get going through one of these scanning machines is infinitesimal and way below what they would call unacceptable limits. But the pilots argue that radiation dosages are cumulative, and the pilots are going through these things 3 and 4 times a day, and they're not happy.
Well, they're not happy, but I think they're mostly not happy that they have to go through security screening to begin with.
Yeah.
I think this is really, for a lot of pilots, it's really an issue of I shouldn't be subjected to the same kind of screening as everybody else, and that's the issue. And, if you had a way of verifying the identity and making sure at the checkpoint that Captain Smith is really Captain Smith, you have to question the logic of, we have to protect this guy from getting into the cockpit. We're giving him the keys. He's getting in the cockpit. He's taking control of the airplane. It's, we are trusting him with the airplane, whether he's got a 6-inch pair of scissors in his bag is really not the issue.
And then last but not least, Scott, it's the process itself. I'm sure you've gone through these machines already. I have.
Yeah.
You have to take everything out of your pockets. It's not just your belt or your keys or your loose change. It's anything that's in your pockets, your shirt pockets, your pants pockets. That has to go in the kitty litter box. You're in there for about 35 seconds while they basically do the screening. There's a guy in another room who's presumably looking at your image, which some people would call the virtual strip search. And then you can't just walk out and leave. You have to be cleared when he looks at the image and says, okay, Mr. McCartney or Mr. Greenberg, you're cleared to go. That's going to take about a minute and a half to 2.5 minutes total time elapsed. Now you start multiplying that by the time, by the number of people who are in line. You got some serious waiting time here.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's one of the big reasons why it's going to be a problem at Thanksgiving. You have people who are completely unfamiliar with this procedure. And it is quite different. You have to take off your belt. You have to... they want you to put your wallet in your bag. I have a problem with that. When I've gone through different times, I've held my wallet in my hand, some TSA guys are okay with that, and some aren't. And so you have, as usual, rules enforced different ways at different checkpoints. Women go through with a necklace on that you forget to take off, and well, that triggers the alarm. Well, now you've bought yourself a pat down, which only adds to the time that it takes to get through.
Exactly.
So it really could clog things up for Thanksgiving.
I'll tell you, planes, trains, and automobiles. I'm thinking bus. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. And by the way, Tuesday, for some airlines at least, is going to be a busier day than Wednesday this year. People are spreading out some. Both American and Southwest say they're booked heavier on Tuesday than on Wednesday.
Now, you know what? And I don't blame them. I want to get out of town. Anybody who travels on Wednesday, they get no sympathy from either me or Mr. Abuse himself, Scott McCartney.
That's right.
You with me on that one?
I'm with you. Good point.
Are you going anywhere for Thanksgiving?
No, I just came back for a long trip. I'm staying home.
You can't wait to go to the mall.
No, actually, I'm going to a Cowboy game.
Well, you know what? After what they just did to the Giants, unbelievable. You have hope. You
yes.
have hope, Mr. McCartney.
Yes, that's right.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, my friend. Scott
you
McCartney
too.
From the Wall Street Journal. Of course, a regular on our show. And let's hope things get better at the security checkpoints. But if they say to come 2 hours early, you know what? Go 3. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Jamaica right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And a little housekeeping note, if you missed our show last week from Bermuda or you want to listen to any of our previous shows from around the world, become a travel insider on petergreenberg.com. And that gives you on-demand podcasts of all the episodes of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. And we archive everything. In fact, if you go to our website, it's done by subject matter, and anything you want to know, it's in there, including your calls to us as well. We were just talking to Scott McCartney from the Wall Street Journal about the craziness out there at security checkpoints. Well, no big security checkpoints where we are right now. We're just having fun. And joining me right now, somebody who has, I'll give it to you this way. I'll give you his nickname before I give you his name, and that'll give you an idea why he's on the show. His nickname is Respect.
Definitely.
No modesty there. His name, Lieber Jones. He's been the groundskeeper here for over 20 years here at the Duns River Beach Resort that's run by Jewel. Lieber, when people come here, most people, and when they come to a resort, they never leave the resort. You know, they just stay here. It's all-inclusive. I mean, this is on any resort, whether it's the Ritz-Carlton or the Duns River Beach Resort. But they don't really get a chance to really stop, look, and listen to look at the flora and the fauna that's around them, right?
Yes.
So I mean, in your 20 years here, I mean, when you think about the history of Jamaica, it used to be heavily forested, and then the settlers started cutting stuff down. It's been a real interesting challenge to keep it going, isn't it?
Yes, it is a challenge to keep it going.
And what do you do every day? I mean, how big is this area that we're talking about right now?
Okay, this area is 26 acres.
And in that 26 acres, you have, what, 200 species of orchids?
Orchids?
Do you?
No, we had about 10 different species of orchids.
Yes?
Uh-huh.
And what else?
And, well, we have fruits, tree. We have crop plants. We have coastal tree. We have palm trees. And we have outstanding Jamaican native trees. We have ornamental shrubs and trees, you know, all those, you know, we have here.
If somebody comes down here, can they get a tour with you to find out exactly what's out there?
Yes, you know, anybody comes with me, I take them on the tour and I show them everything. Because out of all the categories that I told you about, only the Jamaican native plants that belong to here. You know, the others that I mentioned are plants that
were brought in.
That's
brought
right.
In by the settlers, yeah.
Yes, but no, by Spain or by the English as time to
oh, by Spain, by the invaders.
That's right.
We'll call them
right.
The invaders, okay.
That's right.
What about, you know, a lot of hotels will say to you, oh, we grow our own vegetables or we have an herb garden. What are you growing here?
Well, what we grow here, we have only flowers, you know, like we don't have any vegetable. We used to have a herbs garden, but it was destroyed by Ivan in 2005. So but, you know, yeah. We only have, you know, like as I said before, you know, palms, tree, you know, to mention some of the tree, coconut, royal palm. We have coastal tree like Casuarina willow and sea grape.
What's a sea grape?
Well, sea grape now is the most historical tree that you find in the Caribbean. Those trees, why we say coastal, you know, you always find them at the seaside. You know, they grow at a place, but those are definitely coastal.
And they must
trees.
Have a very strong root system.
Well, they bear berries. The berries can be eaten.
Those are the sea grapes.
Yeah, that's right. And you can also preserve the juice for making wine. But why I say it is the most historical tree is because that is the first tree Christopher Columbus saw when he came to the Caribbean in the 14th century. The first island he saw that tree was in Bahama. Then when he saw that tree, he said San Salvador, which means Holy Savior. Because then he knew from his city, he discovered land.
He discovered wine.
No, land.
He discovered wine. He wanted to drink.
Well, I don't know, but why he said that, you know, it's because, you know, he was traveling from Spain, and, you know, he was traveling pure water. So when he see Chi, now then he know, you know, finally I see Chi, there's land. So he said, you know, San Salvador, which means Holy Savior.
All right, so now that's the sea grape. Yes. You can actually eat the grape.
You can eat the grape.
Is it a sour grape?
No, it is not sour. It's sweet when they become purple. They are edible, and you can preserve the juice for making wine.
How about jam?
Well, yes, you can make jam from it.
Now we're talking.
That's right.
Now, you mentioned coconut.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
But are these coconuts, I mean, coconuts are everywhere. So are you actually harvesting the coconuts here?
Yes, we harvest coconut here. And the coconut now is the most important plants out of the palm family, because every single part of it is useful. If you give me a chance, I could mention a few things that it produces.
Go ahead.
Like it produces, you know, building material. And it you use the leaf for making weaving, like make basket and cap. And you drink the coconut milk. The milk now is good for...
You know what? I'm going for the sea grape. Liebert Jones, the groundskeeper right here at Dunn's Jewel River Resort. Or did I say Jewel Dunn's River Resort? I got to wake that up. Okay, we got it. Hey, Liebert, thanks for joining me. We appreciate it. Back right after this.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
3 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Jewel in Dunn's River in Jamaica, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And of course, you have tons of time to call because you're too busy waiting to get screened at the TSA line. So pick up your phones and give us a call. You know, we just heard Life in the Fast Lane by the Eagles. Well, now it's time to look for Life in the Darwinian Lane. Our next guest is the author of The Darwinian Tourist, Viewing the World Through Evolutionary Eyes, a whole different way to see the world. His name, Christopher Wills. Hey, Christopher.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I mean, bottom line is, how did you come up with an idea like this? Because people are always trying to figure out the process of travel in a very one-dimensional way, but you decided to go back to the future in a way.
Well, I'm working on four dimensions.
That's very scary right there.
That's right. You travel to a different part of the world, and what amazes you, of course, is how different it all is. And what I'm really after in this book is to try to explain to the reader why it is that as you go to another place in the world, everything changes. And the reason it changes is because you're looking at millions or even hundreds of millions of years of separate evolution. If you go to Australia, for example, you're surrounded by marsupial animals, and marsupials and placental animals like us parted company well over 100 million years ago. And the big question that you have to ask as you land on the shores of Australia is, how did that happen? And that's what the book really tries to get at.
Well, I've got to ask the question, how did that happen?
Okay. Marsupials floated off on a chunk of an old continent that broke up a long time ago, and probably were separated from placental animals on Australia because they were separated by Antarctica, which, even though Antarctica wasn't very cold at the time, was very dark and unpleasant, sort of like Mordor, you know, in the Lord of the Rings. And so the animals that were able to get across that huge barrier were a very small sample of the total. And
well, you know, it's interesting because I live on an island in New York called Fire Island, and it's 32 miles long. It's 50 miles east of Manhattan. The only way you get over there really is by boat, and yet we have deer. And, you know, I kept on thinking, how did they get there? They didn't swim. And then it suddenly dawned on me, this is the extent of my great knowledge of how these things happen, which is why I find your book fascinating. When the bay froze a couple of years ago, they just walked across.
Absolutely. Animals are enormously resourceful, and so are plants. They can hitch rides on animals for thousands of miles all kinds of neat stuff can happen.
You mentioned bed bugs.
Oh, now, yes. And that brings you right up to date in New York.
Well, bed bugs are the original hitchhikers.
Well, yes, that's right. We also have lice, you know. Humans have two kinds of lice. And one fascinating evolutionary story is, how did we acquire these two kinds? They live on different parts of our body. We won't go into details here on a family show, but still, you know, this kind of interaction is one that gives you a whole new way of looking at travel and how to get around the world.
Based on the findings that you've made, what was the biggest surprise that you had?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I start off the book by talking about some scuba diving expeditions I made to an area called the Lembe Strait in Indonesia. You've probably talked about it on the show at one time or other. And as you dive at Lembe, there are all kinds of creatures, goggle-eyed, slithery creatures sort of swimming around, and they're all your relatives. And, of course, looking at some of them a little more distant than others, obviously, but it's interesting to be surrounded by your relatives and to see how incredibly, mind-bogglingly diverse they actually are.
That's the beautiful thing about what you've done in the book is because it's a different kind of guidebook. From now on, when I travel, I got to look at that book to figure out where my relatives are.
Absolutely. You'll find them in some pretty surprising places.
Yeah, like the Bronx.
Right.
But you mentioned, you know, some of the relatives that are over there in the Indonesian Straits area, but what about closer to home? What about just in the United States alone?
Well, we, you know, we're donny-come latelys to this continent. Humans arrived in the Americas only about 13, maybe as much as 14,000 years ago. And we've not done a great deal of evolving since that time, but we have done a lot of changing of the environment. We probably drove many large animals to extinction. There were horses in America when we arrived. We wiped them all out. They had to be reintroduced by the conquistadors. We've done huge changes. And, of course, you know, the thing that really concerns me in the book is that if you go to different places on the planet and see the huge impact that humans have had,
Christopher, I've got to hold you off right there. Stay with me a second.
Sure.
Christopher Will, the author of The Darwinian Tourist, Viewing the World Through Evolutionary Eyes. Stay with me. We'll be right back from the Jewel in Dunn's River in Jamaica.
The Peter. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Jewel in Dunn's River in Jamaica. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-Peter. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. We've been talking with Christopher Wills, the author of a fascinating book called The Darwinian Tourist, Viewing the World Through Evolutionary Eyes, one surprise after another after another. When we were just talking to Christopher, I said, okay, what about the United States? And, well, we don't even register here, right?
Oh, we certainly register in terms of our current impact in America. And,
but I'm talking, talking, Christopher, about the search to try to find that connectivity that you found in so many other places in the world.
Right. If you look at the history of the Americas, you find that some of our earlier relatives, that go right back to the beginning of the age of mammals, did live in the Americas. And then some of them, of course, have evolved into the little monkeys that you'll find throughout Central and South America. So there's been a big gap in our evolutionary history in the Americas, a gap that is, of course, filled in other parts of the world. But the fascinating question is, you know, why didn't these animals go in the same direction that we did, towards bigger brains and things like that? This is a big and very puzzling question.
Well, when you look around this, you know, we talk about this word that always gets me a little bit confused, biodiversity.
Mm.
Because You'll find that just about everywhere, and yet it's hard to explain it.
Well, I spent a fair amount of time. The reason I really got involved in this book is because I've been traveling around the world working with tropical ecologists, people who spend their lives in the tropics measuring biodiversity. And we've gotten together and looked at some of the data that have been collected over the last few years, and we found some interesting patterns and interesting explanations for why there are so many different species in the tropics. A bit more too complicated for a five-minute segment, but of course the book...
I'll be the judge of that. try me out on one. Go ahead.
All right, sure. If you look at the species of tree, let's say, in a tropical forest, you may find within a small area of the forest there can be 1,000 or more different species of tree, all occupying an area that you might think is just not complicated enough to support all these different species. And what together we've all found is that these trees are not living in a vacuum. They're living surrounded by their pathogens and their predators and the creatures that eat them. All these creatures are interacting with the trees in such a way that if a species becomes too common, then its pathogens and predators can multiply unchecked and will drive it down to smaller numbers. So there's a constant battle between the animals and the plants that occupy these complex ecosystems and the pathogens and predators that prey upon them. And it is this constantly shifting balance that explains why our ecosystems are so complex.
And added to that, sir, the fact that almost every 3 or 4 months, I read stories about new species being discovered at varying depths of the oceans.
Oh, that's right. We know so little about the oceans, especially the deep oceans. This is a whole universe that waits to be explored. You know, I spend a bit of time in the book exploring the shallower parts of the seas where I've been able to go. But, of course, many scientists are able to penetrate this amazing new world far beyond the depths that I've been able to reach.
Every pun intended, I would never call this a shallow book.
Well, you're very kind.
The name of the book again, The Darwinian Tourist, Viewing the World Through Evolutionary Eyes. Fascinating read. The author, the professor of biological sciences, and, of course, he's the member of the Center for Molecular Genetics at the University of California, which they're going to find all my relatives somewhere out there in the oceans. His name again, Christopher Wills. Christopher, thank you so much, sir. We really appreciate that.
Thank you, Peter. I've enjoyed it.
You got it. And you know, this is not a bad companion book to bring with you on your next trip, because the way the book is organized, everywhere you go, you open up a page and go, I had absolutely no idea. You know, it's one thing to take a tour of a rainforest. It's another thing to understand, as Professor Wills does, how that tree got there. But even more important, how it stayed there. People forget about that. How the heck did it stay there? When we deal with how many species become extinct every year, which is scary enough, part of it may not be our doing at all. It may be the fact that it got to a place it wasn't supposed to even be, and then got destroyed by the other species that were there. And that's the most fascinating thing at all. And that's not biodiversity. That's just fascination in my book. But it's not my book. It's his book. Anyway, when we come back, we've got a whole lot more coming the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort. Say that 5 times fast. In Duns River in Jamaica, a place that I have come to know and love. Of course, those of you who watched our show, what we did with the royal tour for both the Prime Minister of Jamaica, and then we came back and did one with the First Lady. An amazing place. Talk about biodiversity. You'll find it here. And it's not just fish eggs that light up in the dark. I just thought I'd mention that. Anyway, when we come back, more of that and more on the TSA, what it means to you. Is this just a passing crisis, or is it going to have to be something we're going to have to live with? And you know what? Pick the latter. It's only going to get worse. All right. Back with more. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, you know what's coming up next. More Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Jewel Duns River Resort in Jamaica. Back right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend before Thanksgiving, wherever you happen to be. Let me tell you where we're coming from. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 18 degrees, 15 minutes north. 77 degrees, 30 minutes west. We are coming to you from Jamaica at the Jewel Guns River Beach Resort. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And you know the drill. If you can't get through on the phones, email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. So much stuff in the news this week. You know how crazy it is out there with the new TSA screening machines and the lines, and all the different issues that have been raised. Let's go through them because it is nuts out there. The TSA has a public relations fiasco on its hands. There are three different issues. There's privacy, of course, and what people are considering an invasive body pat-down. There are health potential issues in terms of the pilots screaming and yelling about possible increased dosages of radiation by going through those machines. And last but not least, especially in this time of the year when people are about to fly more than they ever have, it's the time issue of what it's going to cost you in terms of time to just get through those security lines, because it's not like going through the old magnetometers. Bottom line here is, it ain't over till it's over, but if you want to get out to the airport about 3 hours early, you might want to do that, not just on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, but on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving coming up. The issues now are a little nuts. Everything's going viral on the internet as people are getting angry about the pat-downs, and let's talk about that. Why do we have these machines? Because it's in the wake of the Christmas bomber last year, the underwear bomber, who got through two security checkpoints, one in Africa and one in Amsterdam, literally wearing the materials of the bomb he tried to make on the plane. So that's why we have the scanning machines out there, to be able to show you the full body scan. We're all in favor of better security. However, it's the process that's driving people nuts. Because on the privacy issue, there's this thought, just a thought, there's some guy in a back room named Vern who's going to put down his Penthouse magazine long enough to look at your body. And whether or not they're going to archive those images. And, of course, the TSA is always claiming they don't archive them. And every day on the Internet, guess what? People are releasing those images. So somebody's keeping them, and somebody's broadcasting them again. So that's one issue. The second issue is that we all have the right not to go through those machines, which means we can opt out, which means we opt in for the actual pat-down. The pat-down these days is not the pat-down of yesterday. It's a much more invasive pat-down, where the TSA agents have been given the authority by the government use the fingers of their hands, the palm and the heels of their hands to grope around the breast and the genitalia, and people are getting a little freaked out. There's another issue, of course, which the TSA has backed off on a little bit, which is children. How many people listening to this show who want to be responsible parents, who want to tell their kids and instruct their kids never to talk to strangers, never let a stranger touch them, and what happens at the airport? All of the above. Also interesting to watch. Then there are the health issues. The pilots are very, very angry about having to go through the machines, because even though the TSA claims that the dosages of radiation are infinitesimal and way below what we consider unacceptable levels, when you talk to any radiologist, they'll tell you the problem of radiation is a cumulative one, and pilots are going to be going through those machines three and four and sometimes even five times a day. So they're angry. And last but not least is the process itself, meaning if you're going to go through that machine versus what you used to go through on the magnetometer, let's do the math. The magnetometer, once you took your watch and your belt off and your keys and spare change, took you 4 seconds to go through the magnetometer. That is not the case with the scanning machines. You have to take everything out of your pockets, and most people don't realize that until they get in the machine, and they have to back out and do that. Then it scans you for about 35 seconds, but you're not done yet, because that guy Vern back in the back room has to then radio the guy talking to you in front of you at the TSA claiming that you're clear to leave. That's a 2.5 to 3 minute process. Now let's multiply that by the number of people standing in line and trying to get to their planes. Watch out. That's why I'm saying for this Thanksgiving vacation period, at least 3 hours to the airport, guys, because it's going to be nuts. Why? There are a lot of first-time flyers there who don't even know about the magnetometers, let alone the scanning machines. So now you've heard it from me first. It's going to be crazy. By the way, one of the things we always tell you to do is to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations that are doing all that important work out there in Haiti and Chile and Western China and, of course, in the Gulf. You can really get involved. And, by the way, you want to visit my website, by the way, not just for that, but for all the news you can use. And, in fact, of course, this week we've got the AAA predictions on how bad holiday traffic's going to be. And guess what? It's going to be up there. And for those of you who plan to fly, of course, we've got my CBS report from the early show on those full-body scanners and the more invasive pat-downs at the airport. Don't forget to sign up to be an insider for even more access. Insider membership means you access my radio show anytime you want, and you get behind-the-scenes interviews from yours truly. Now, I'm coming to Jamaica. You know, people come to Jamaica for the beach, for the resorts. I don't know a lot of people come to Jamaica for hot chocolate. But my next guest knows a little bit about that. He's the morning drink maker. I want that title. I want to be the morning drink maker. His name is Leiford Boswell. Leiford, welcome to the show. Hot chocolate, but it's a different kind of Jamaican chocolate, isn't it?
Thank you, Peter, and welcome on to the traveling world. I want to say thanks and welcome.
Yeah, you got it. But, I mean, tell me what's different about Jamaican hot chocolate here.
Well, my chocolate. Maybe it's your chocolate. My taste.
Yeah.
I think I got a unique taste for it. And it's similar ingredients to what anybody else would make it with.
Except?
I did a specialty to it. I got a special touch.
You got a special touch. Okay, try to impress me here. What's the special touch? What's the special ingredient?
Well, it's a taste. I got a taste to it that nobody has.
Well, what you're trying to tell me is it's got a kick to it.
Kick.
What makes it have the kick?
Well, that's the way I make it.
Pepper?
No.
No pepper?
No pepper.
Is it hot?
You know,
I'm not talking about temperature now.
Yeah, well,
it's a little spicy.
Well, hot in terms of it's people are accepting it.
They don't have a choice. They're in Jamaica.
Yeah, well, they're in Jamaica, but most people tell me that when they taste my chocolate, it's the best they ever taste.
All right, so I see what you've got here because it's radio. I'm going to explain. You got nutmeg, you got chocolate, you got milk, of course.
Salt.
Ah, here we go. A little salt. What else?
Yeah, and some cinnamon.
Well, that sounds pretty good. And that gets you going in the day.
Yeah, well, if you put too much of one ingredient, then you're going to have something else.
Well, no kidding.
I got a well balanced.
Well, wait a second. How about alcohol?
No.
Never.
You can add it.
See, there's some people who can't start the day without that.
That's true.
All right. So that's the really hot kicker.
Yes, it is.
All right. So now you do this over at the Coral Cafe.
Sure, sir.
And how many of these do you make a day?
Well, sometimes I make 100 cups, maybe more. Because locals love it.
The local drink.
Yeah, and the traveling public is
they're getting used to it.
Yeah, they're getting used to it.
Cool. Okay, so let's make some of this thing while I talk. Okay, what are you going to do?
Okay, I'll put all the dry ingredients.
Yep.
Then make it a little paste, all
right? Right.
Make sure the paste is there. If you don't have a unique paste for it, it's not going to be
new. Now, hold it. But you're not giving me actual measurements. It's like a pinch of this and a thing.
Well, actually, the cocoa that I use is already a little mixed.
Yeah.
So the little I put to it gives that extra kick.
Cool.
To lift it.
All right, so that's pretty good. And the cool thing about that is you get to drink it while you're being patted down at the security checkpoint. No?
No.
It gets you through the security checkpoints even faster.
Well, cocoa gets you going. If you're on a cold day, then it keeps you up.
All right. When we come back, Nicholas Kralov is going to talk about what the airlines are really charging, and it's not pretty. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica. Peter Greenberg here with you, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we will get back to you and solve it right here on the air. You know, if you take a look at the holiday season coming up, what do we see? We see the airlines have actually decreased their capacity. There's not an empty seat available on the planes. Airfares are through the roof. And that's just the beginning, because we haven't dealt with what we call ancillary revenue. That's everything from the pillows, the blankets, the soft drinks. The one I love the best is are the airlines that are charging you up to $39 to sit closer to first class. So what that means, you see, is for that $39 payment, you get to smell the cookies. You still can't have them. And some of these airlines are actually determining that even middle seats and coach that are closer to first class are more desirable than other seats in the back of the plane. How stupid is that? But some people really want to do that, and they're willing to pay for it. And when you start adding up all those ancillary fees, then it's no surprise why by the end of this year, the airlines of the world will have generated over $13 billion in those fees. We've just seen watershed third quarter results from the airlines financially. The fourth quarter, which is usually a terrible quarter for the airlines, they're actually going to basically break even, which normally they never do in the fourth quarter. Now, by the way, we don't, you know, on this show, I have a philosophy, and you should too, that I don't want to deny anybody the opportunity to make a profit. Why shouldn't they? But why not truth in pricing? Why not transparency? Why not just charge me for what it costs me to fly and stop with the nickel and diming? I have the same issue with hotels. I have the same issue with cruise lines. The whole idea of a base fee is people mistakenly think that's what they're going to pay, and they're not. They're going to pay a multiple of that. And joining me now, one of our regulars on the show, who used to write for the Washington Times and the Financial Times, he has just a few things to say about ancillary fees and how the airlines have found what he thinks is a new way to overcharge flyers. Nicholas Kralov. Hey, Nicholas.
Hello. How are you, Peter?
I'm okay. So, you know, how bad is it?
Well, it is bad. There's no question about that. But it gets really worse when people don't know what the system has become. And, of course, you and I know that these are most of the people. 99% of the public doesn't know the intricacies and the details of all this. And the system has become what it has because the airlines have made it such. Why? Because they want to make more money. And so in this effort to maximize revenue, they do what's called testing your willingness to pay, and ultimately you end up paying more money.
Well, I mean, if you go through many of the websites that the airlines have, they've structured them in a way that you actually have to opt out of paying as opposed to opting in. And so all of a sudden, before you know it, there are extra charges that you're paying for insurance that you didn't necessarily need. You know what I find really interesting? This is the one that gets me. If you buy a full fare coach, a full fare business, or a full fare a first class ticket, those are fully refundable tickets. Why is the airline then offering you insurance? Insurance against what? Your own stupidity?
That's right. And there are things like many airlines now have this mileage multiplier. If you pay more money, you're going to get more miles. And these miles, of course, don't count towards your status. They just, you know, they're miles to be used. But as you're saying, on many websites, the default, or the big, huge button is, yes, I want that, and the little button is, no, I don't.
Okay, now you mentioned mileage, so I've got to go one step further on that one, Nicholas, and that's this. So many people have their credit cards linked to an affinity program of an airline, whether it be United Airlines with Chase or Citibank with American, et cetera, or Delta with American Express, and they will try to put everything they buy on those credit cards. There's a new card with Chase with United that'll offer you in many cases triple mileage,
yes.
So three miles for every dollar you spend on that card. But here's the interesting thing that people don't realize when you start doing the math: it's a double whammy, sometimes a triple whammy, because if you use that card and you buy a $1,000 item, so you might get 3,000 miles that you can't redeem anyway. That's number one. Number two, you're paying 18 to 21% interest. And sometimes much higher. Some of these cards go up to 39% interest on that $1,000 purchase. So a 39% interest on $1,000 is, guess what? $390.
Yeah, I mean, many people get these cards because of the huge bonuses that they these are the seemingly huge bonuses because you sign up. American Airlines just had, and I think still has, in fact, a promotion that they give you 75,000 miles when you spend a certain amount of money for the first 6 months or whatever the deal is. And so people get attracted by this offer and not, of course, doing their math, as you're suggesting, and realizing that at the end of the year or the end of, you know, the first 2 or 3 years, it might not be so profitable. But that said, there are people who do their math. And if you look at the websites like FlyerTalk, these people have figured all the whole thing out. And so they'd know how to benefit from the 75,000 miles they got at the beginning with the promotion, and then not fall for the gimmicks and the tricks that you're talking about, and of course most people don't know about. And
well,
so that's
well,
why
well,
that's
you,
even,
know,
you know, you mentioned that I haven't been on the show for probably about a year. You know, I left the Washington Times in June, and I started doing this thing that I call travel education. And it's a concept that doesn't exist at the moment. I'm probably the only person on the planet that uses the words travel and education together. But I do believe that the airline system, the air travel system, has become so complex, so frustrating, so confusing for most people that we really need to start educating travelers how to be good travelers.
Well, it's all about the process, because if you can't understand the process, you'll be destroyed by the system.
Exactly. I travel at least 100,000 miles a year and sometimes 200,000 miles a year, and I ask people all the time on planes at the airports, do you know what is a codeshare flight? No.
Huh.
Some people say, well, yeah, I've heard of it, but what is it? Then I say, well, what's the difference between a nonstop and a direct flight? They say, well, there's no difference. Well, there is a big difference.
There's a big difference.
There's a huge difference. And that's why I created this thing that I call, as you know, my column is called On the Fly, when I work in the Times and I write on my own site. And now I have the On the Fly seminars that I'm trying to teach people how to get the best fares, how to get the elite status, how to get the upgrades, how to get the miles that they can use. And I think I've sort of figured out a way for me to minimize my spending, to maximize my comfort and my luxury, even on, you know, on the flight beds and business class and all that. And so I'm trying to, you know, spread the wisdom.
Well, by the way, your column is called On the Fly. That's also the name that's used now for the TSA pat-down. It's called On the Fly.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Okay.
No, I just made it up. Come on.
Okay, you almost held me there.
Okay, well, hey, somebody at the TSA is probably going to incorporate it now. Hey, Vern, On the Fly, you know. You know, I'm convinced that everybody does a pat-down at the TSA is named Vern. I don't know why. I just think they are. I don't know why, but I just think they are. All right, but, you know, when we get down to a definition of terms, like you mentioned code share or nonstop versus direct, a direct flight means you're on the same plane, but you're stopping. And people don't understand that.
Well, that's not the NO. Most of the if you look at the most of the so-called direct flights in the system today, and I call them direct fake direct flights or fictitious flights, and I've written columns about this several times. These are not you're not staying on the same plane. Look at most flights. What it is the only thing that these two flights have in common is their flight number. Everything else is different. If you get on flight on United Flight 966 in Los Angeles, that flight is sold as a direct flight from LA to Rome. Well, guess what? The flight from LA to Washington is on an Airbus 319 with a two-cabin economy and first class. And then you get on another plane, which is, depending on the season, it's either a 777 Boeing or a 767 with a three-cabin, of course, with, economy, business, and first class. And it's a different gate. You know, when you come back from the other direction, you're going to go Rome to Washington, get off the plane, go through immigration and customs, then recheck your luggage and go through security and then go to the next gate. So there's nothing in common between these two flights but their number. And they're sold like this for marketing reasons because, you know, the airline wants to persuade the people in Los Angeles that by buying a ticket on United, they're going to get a so-called hassle-free experience. They get on a plane in L.A. and get off the plane in Rome. Well, that it's not the case. What you're doing is basically like any other connecting flight. So it's just, you know, it's a marketing thing. And I wish the Department of Transportation actually would do something about it because it's cheating. It's direct, you know, deliberately misleading the customers that they're avoiding hassle.
And you're right. And by the way, the DOT is investigating the whole idea of code sharing because it's been so misleading for so long. You know, and at one point you knew that if a flight had four numbers on it, it was a regional flight. Not anymore.
Yeah, right. Well, obviously we have the four-digit regional flight numbers, but now with the code shares also. And I've had people who say, well, I bought a ticket on U.S. Airways that was, you know, L.A. to Washington and nonstop. And I went to check in with U.S. Airways in L.A. in Terminal 2. Well,
and it was United.
The flight is
and
a United flight.
It was a United flight. Nicholas Kralov, On the Fly. And I'll see him at the TSA checkpoint, too. Thank you, Nicholas. We really appreciate that. And when we come back, a little bit of Dunn's River that you didn't know about. With the groundskeeper.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 33 minutes after the hour on this beautiful November weekend. Hope you're having a wonderful time in preparation for the madness of Thanksgiving travel. Peter Greenberg here taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. We're coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Resort in Jamaica. And, in fact, this place has been around for a long time. In fact, it opened up in 1957 as the Arawak. And my next guest remembers it well because he was here. His name is Claude Graham. And what I love about this is we have a segment on the show that we always like to call Ask the Locals. Well, you can't get more local than my next guest because he's seen everything. And now he's the beekeeper. Quite an accidental development, which we'll talk about. His name is Claude Graham. Hey, Claude.
Yes, sir.
So you've been here since day one.
Yes, yes, yes. I've been here from 1958.
Oh, my goodness.
This place opened 1957, and a year after I was here.
Now, you started as a houseman, then you went to be bellhop.
Yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
But then, while you were bellhop, you decided you were going to do something else. You were also going to be a beekeeper?
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Is this by choice?
My father was a beekeeper. My father. He died in 1958.
So you became the beekeeper.
Right.
You
right.
had no choice. That
no,
was it.
No,
you were in.
Right.
So when people mention to me Jamaica, they mention coffee, of course. They mention all sorts of other things. You just mentioned hot chocolate, but not bees.
No, no.
So, I mean, not that many beekeepers in Jamaica, are there?
Yes, quite a lot.
Really?
Quite a lot. All over the island, you know, there's plenty.
So how do you learn to be a beekeeper without getting stung?
Well, you always get stung. It's sometimes you are in the beehive in the apiary, and you don't get a bite.
And other
sometimes,
days?
Other times, when the queen started to lay, that's the time the bees they get bad.
Now you weren't always at this resort because you left.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, when they started redoing the resort, right, new ownership, new management.
Yes.
They had a problem with bees. They discovered they had a problem. What was going on?
No, they didn't have a problem around this side.
Oh, I was told they had a tree that was full of bees, and they called you in to fix it.
Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes.
Oh, you remember
oh, yes.
that now.
I remember that. Oh,
aren't you glad I remembered that?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
And?
And another time, they have a hive up by the top there, and I came, and I take them out and put them in a different box and move them away.
Okay, so now you're back being the beekeeper.
Yes, yes, yes.
And making honey.
Right.
Different kinds of honey?
Well, you have certain times you have the logwood that blossom.
Yes.
Right. You have wild coffee. You have June plum.
Right.
And, yes. And you have guinep.
What's that?
Which guinep, some little round things, you know, but yes, it's a nice honey. Guinep, and then you have the dogwood. The dogwood is a browner honey, but the logwood, it's a clear honey. It's clear.
And that's what you want.
Yeah. A lot of people prefer the logwood because it's clear, but the other honey is more thicker. The nectar is more thicker.
Well, let me ask you this. I am not a beekeeper.
Yeah.
I don't know much about bees. I usually try to stay away from them. But my question to you is, how many bees, stupid question maybe, how many bees does it take to make the honey? I mean, what's a typical bee colony here in Jamaica in terms of numbers of bees?
Well, I used to have about 80 boxes. And 4 years ago,
what's in a box? How many bees?
80 boxes. 80 hives. 80 hives.
Right, but how many bees, more or less?
A whole lot.
I know there's a whole lot, but
yes,
I mean, is it 5,000, 10,000?
More than that.
More than that?
Yes,
like
yes.
60,000?
Could be.
Could
yes,
be.
Yes.
And if they're in a stinging mood, you're in trouble.
Oh, yes.
And
how much
can you produce? How much honey can you produce?
Well, sometime for the year, we produce a whole lot of honey when there's a lot of nectar out there.
I mean, I was told that 60 it takes about 60,000 bees to produce about between 8 to 15 gallons of honey. Is that about right?
Yes.
That's quite a large ratio.
Yes.
And how do you keep the bees happy?
Well, they are always happy because so long as the nectar is out there, they go out and they come in, put in, and they go out again. A bee always keep working until he die. You don't have any time to...
So basically they're stupid.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we got that concept. But speaking of dying bees, it is a serious global problem now when you see a decrease in the population of bees.
Oh, yes. We have a decrease about 4 years ago when a mite came in and the whole islands was affected. I used to have 80 colonies, and I go right down to about 10.
Have you built it back up?
I'm trying to build it up back now. Right now, I have about 18 colonies now.
And I can buy your honey, can't I?
I used to sell the arawak honey.
Right.
Honey, yeah.
Where can I get it now?
Well, there's none now. It's off-season now.
But if it was on-season, where can I buy it? Right here?
Yeah.
And what's the name of it?
Lagwood honey. Lagwood.
Lagwood honey, okay.
Yes.
Claude Graham,
yes.
Local beekeeper. I see no bites on you today, so something must be working. I really appreciate that.
Yes.
And when we come back, more from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica. Back right up.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by
Travel Guard. Visit travelguard.com/unlucky. Tell us what makes you the world's unluckiest traveler, and you could win a $10,000 dream vacation. Brought to you by Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Resort in Jamaica. How appropriate that the music is called Life in the Fast Lane by the Eagles, because we're about to go a little bit slower right now. Hard to believe we are celebrating the 75th anniversary of a legendary airplane called the China Clipper. And I'll make a bet that most people listening to this show don't even know what I'm talking about. But if you're an aviation buff like I am, and like my next guest is, the China Clipper is just not another airplane. It really created the routes that we fly today. It was the pioneering airplane that really spanned the globe. My next guest, John Hill, from the San Francisco Airport. Hey, John.
Hi, Peter.
I mean, safe to say that was a plane that really pioneered all the routes for one trip in Pan Am, especially over the Pacific and in Asia.
It really was. The China Clipper and the rest of the flying boats that Pan American pioneered over ocean air travel with became really the blueprint for commercial air transport as we know it today.
I mean, you know, we think about going from Los Angeles to Hong Kong now. It's about a 12.5 or 13-hour flight. How long did the China Clipper take to make that trip?
Well, China Clipper went out of San Francisco, and in only 6 days you could find yourself landing on the harbor at Hong Kong.
But, of course, it was not a nonstop flight, as our last guest was talking about. This is not about direct or nonstop. This was take off on the water, land on the water.
That's correct. These were truly flying boats that could only take off and alight on a watery surface, and they certainly had to refuel at five stops between here and Hong Kong.
And how fast did that plane fly?
Oh, it cruised at about 130 miles per hour.
Although, I must say, the passengers were well treated. They got meals, and there were beds up there.
They certainly were. The duration of flight, and we're talking about legs between San Francisco, Honolulu, Midway Island, Wake Island, Guam, Manila, and then Hong Kong, just from San Francisco to Honolulu could be anywhere from 17, 18, 19, sometimes 20 hours, depending on the winds. And they outfitted the cabin with berths, and they had dining rooms and fairly deluxe accommodations.
And, of course, we're celebrating. When I say we're celebrating the 70th anniversary, we're not kidding. On November 22nd, 1935, that was the Pan Am flying boat, nicknamed or actually christened the China Clipper, that took off from San Francisco Bay. And it was carrying, which I really find interesting because people forget in this country that the airline's biggest customer was not passengers, it was the U.S. Postal Service. That's how the airline started. It was actually carrying, on this flight, 110,865 letters, because everybody wanted that postmark, didn't they?
That's absolutely right, and you could not be more correct that passengers were actually third on the list of priority after mail and express, or what we call cargo, and passengers came third. Without a mail contract, airlines had very little chance of surviving economically. And that first scheduled flight on November 22nd, 1935, 75 years ago, next week, was indeed a mail run.
It was a mail run. And interestingly enough, when you track the route that it flew, even today I've had a chance, and I've been very lucky in terms of my charm travel life, to actually stop where that flight used to stop, because nobody ever flies there anymore. We're talking Midway and Wake Island. I mean, nobody stops there anymore.
That's fantastic. Yeah, they were. They try to maintain some facilities there for any time an airplane really needs to stop. But of course, with the range of our modern airliners, they don't. So
yeah, you know, the little known, the little known fact, John,
unknown in the early part of the 20th century, and they were more or less discovered through necessity, because they needed these stepping stone stops to make these long journeys across the Pacific.
In fact, the little-known fact today is that the only reason why they keep the Midway Airport open in the middle of Midway Island is that's the only reason why Boeing was able to get certification for their twin-engine planes to be able to fly nonstop over the ocean, so that if they lost an engine, they had a place to land.
That's absolutely correct. I've heard the same story.
It's true. Now, there you are in San Francisco. If people want to see more about the plane, learn more about the plane, they could, there's stuff they can see, isn't there?
There absolutely is. San Francisco International Airport has had a museum program for well over 25 years now, and when we activated our new international terminal, there was an addition made to that those offerings in the shape of an aviation museum and library. And since we focus almost entirely on commercial air transport with a regional emphasis on the Pacific, the legacy
and
of
the
China
and you got the
is really...
All right. And you got the museum right there. So if you're stuck in the security line at San Francisco, do yourself a favor and check out the museum. Happy anniversary. John Hill, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that. We'll be back with more from Dunn's River right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
And welcome back. 52 minutes after the hour on this beautiful November weekend, wherever you happen to be. We're in Jamaica at the Jewel Dunn's River Beach Resort, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-887-3837. 88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We've just been talking about the history of the China Clipper, the flying boats, celebrating their 75th anniversary. So how more appropriate in Jamaica to keep it on the water and talk about all the great things. I mean, I'm a boat guy. Everybody knows that. And if I can't be on the water every 10 days, I take hostages. So coming to Jamaica is okay with me. And my next guest knows a little bit about that. His name is Lascelles Vidal, and of course, he's not just a boat captain; he's a master sailor.
Yes, I am.
No humility there.
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. Yeah, what kind of boats are we talking about?
Basically, catamarans, small obi cats that anybody who comes on vacation, even if you're a novice sailor, you can be taught how to operate one.
No, you see, you have to be taught how to write one. Because
yes,
you're going to flip over.
We'll teach you that.
You're going to fly. You're going to flip over. But
yeah,
once you get a Hobie Cat going, you fly.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So we'll teach you.
All sailboats? No motorboats?
No motorboats.
Cool.
All sailboats.
So you know what better place to learn how to sail than down here where you can't get in too much trouble?
Definitely. And the water is warm.
Yeah, we like that idea.
Yeah.
All right, how'd you get started?
It's just a love for what I do. First, I started out raking the beach. And saw the guys sailing, and they were so cool.
Well, see, the choice between raking the beach and sailing, you chose sailing. I can't believe that.
Right, definitely.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a hard choice, but I finally got there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who taught you?
A friend of mine. named Fitzroy.
Cool. Yeah. Now, the catamarans, the Hobies can only hold, what, three people?
Yes. We have a big Hobie getaway where we can take two couples plus me.
But it's still pretty small.
Yes, it is. But it's fun. You don't want to be crowded.
All right, but now you can you go sailing and scuba?
Well, not off my Hobie cat.
I didn't think so.
No.
That's a whole different kind of boat.
All different.
Are you a diver too?
No, I don't dive.
You just stay on the sailboats.
Definitely.
But when you take a look at the coast of Jamaica, there's so many, there's such a different topography no matter where you are on in the country, right?
Yes, sir.
You keep it closer to Montego Bay and closer to Dunn's River, or you go all over the island?
Well, I've sailed basically between the harbors of Miami Bay and Ocho Rios, which is closer to where we're at right now.
We're very close to Ocho Rios here.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've sailed in Montego Bay. I've sailed in Negril also.
When you're out there, how far out do you go? Because people are always going to ask you that. How far out do you go?
We don't go where you cannot see the land. We always stay on within the reef. Yeah, because we try to keep it safe.
Now, honestly, you take me out on the Hobie, you teach me how to do it,
yeah.
And then you let me out on my own?
Definitely.
Watch out. Okay, yeah. And I could get in trouble, though.
I mean, I've done that so many times that it's not a problem. Because we have a rescue boat.
Ah, the rescue boat. Okay,
yes,
just double-checking that we have the rescue boat.
If you're wandering off too far, pretty soon you'll hear a motor coming behind you. Hey, Peter, get back this way, please.
I know.
Yeah.
They usually do that with me when I have a motor.
Yeah.
But most of the people come down here. What's it going to cost them to take that Hobie cat out?
Just their willingness to learn.
No. How much is it going to cost them?
No, it's a part of their package.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, it's a part of the package.
So you come down here and it's all-inclusive. It's great.
Yes, it is.
That's great. So you come down here.
Yes.
Have a little Jamaican hot chocolate.
Right.
Get wired.
Right.
Get out in the boat.
Definitely.
Disappear.
And you're good to go. No, we won't allow you to disappear.
Are there places where you can tell people to beach the Hobie cat that are private beaches too?
No, we wouldn't do that because of security purpose. Not that it's dangerous or anything like that. But you wouldn't want to just pull up on a beach you're alone and you're in a strange country.
Yeah.
So we would take you out on a ride. And if there's a little beach, we'll pull up and be there with you.
What about racing? Do you do races?
I mean, we'll organize some races between the guys that we teach how to sail and see how good they are. The loser by the beer.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's the way to work.
For real.
Absolutely. How rough does the water get?
It varies. Sometimes the water is so rough, but we have signs. We have red flags, green flags, and yellow flags. So if it's a red flag day,
you're not going
no
out.
Sailing going on. If it's a yellow flag day, then we'll be...
You're going out, but you're not coming back.
No,
and then if it's a green flag, okay.
If it's green flag, you're good to go. Yellow flag day, we will take you for rides. We won't let you go out by yourself. But if it's a green flag day, you can go out and have fun by yourself.
Okay, now tell me the truth now. You let me go. I'm a powerboat guy, so I'm, you know, part of being smart is admitting what you're dumb at.
Right.
So you put me on the Hobie cat. I don't care how much you're going to teach me. I'm going to flip that thing, aren't I? I'm going to end up in the water. Come on, look the truth.
Yeah, that's all part of the lesson.
Ah, getting dunked.
Right. And showing you how to get the boat up again.
Yeah, you stand up on the center board, don't you?
Well, these Hobie cats don't have a center board, but we have what you call a righting line that you use to upright the boat.
And does it work?
It does. Like a charm.
Except in my case, we have to send out the rescue boat. Come on.
I mean, we have to go out and rescue quite a few people, especially those who come to you and tell you, yeah.
No, I know everything.
Exactly. Okay. I live way up in the Rockies in Colorado. I've been sailing from I was this big.
In the Rockies?
Yes.
Yeah, you better go rescue
yes,
them.
Yes, and you believe them.
You do, and you believe
absolutely.
Them?
Absolutely.
And then you go rescue them?
Absolutely. As soon as you send them out, you crank the rescue boat up and you sit on it and you wait. And you're saying to your friend, he's gonna dunk.
Oh, you know right away.
Absolutely.
You just sit there on the shore and laugh
right
at me, don't
now,
you?
Just
you
sit
laugh
in
at
the
me.
Rescue boat and just wait for you to dunk.
See, that's part of the entertainment here,
yes.
Because the doll gives you the boat, sits on the shore, and just laughs at you. That's the package you didn't tell me about. All right, the doll, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you, man.
That music means we're out of time for this show. We will talk to you next week.
Been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide. with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. I bet you I'm having a wonderful weekend because I'm coming to you from, get your maps out, boys and girls, 18 degrees, 15 minutes north, 77 degrees, 30 minutes west. Most people thought last week when we came to you from Bermuda that the Bermuda's in the Caribbean. It's not. It's in the Atlantic. Well, this time we are in the Caribbean. We're coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And bottom line is, get on the phone, call us. We'll help you out. And, of course, getting ready for the Thanksgiving crush and madness. There's a reason why they made the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's to celebrate the next coming week. If you're traveling on Wednesday, you get no sympathy from me. I'll personally come to your house and slap you. Even if you're going on Tuesday, it's crazy. All those flights are full. Understand Thanksgiving for what it really is, an obligatory dysfunctional family get-together. You've got to go to see your crazy relatives who are going to push all your buttons. So follow my advice. I say this every year. It works like a charm. You'll thank me. Here's what you do. You don't travel on Tuesday before Thanksgiving. You don't travel on the day before Thanksgiving. You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and get yourself an airline ticket on Thanksgiving Day itself that leaves at 6 o'clock in the morning. First of all, the plane will be empty. You'll get a much better deal. And then guess what? You'll still get to where you need to go in time to carve the turkey and see all your demented relatives, let them push all the emotional buttons. And then guess what happens? On Friday morning, while they're getting ready to go to the mall and get stuck there, you know what you do on Black Friday? Oh, gotta go. You take a flight back at around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and nobody's on that plane. You can go bowling on that flight. And another cheap deal, you get back to where you need to go, which is called home, in time to do what? Not get stuck on the freeway, not get stuck in the mall, not get stuck with your crazy relatives. And now the entire weekend belongs back to you, and you watch as much bad football as you want. So let's add this up. You dealt with the relatives, you saved money, and you have the weekend back to you, and you can sit there at home and make fun of them on Sunday while they're still stuck at the airport waiting for bags that will never, ever arrive. All right? You listen to me? By the way, those 2 days I gave you, that Thursday and Friday, are about the only 2 days this year the airlines aren't even charging an additional surcharge to fly. So that should tell you something, and you should do it. Of course, if you do it on those 2 days, there'll be less intrusive waits at the airport because there won't be that many people standing in line to go through the scanning machines or to get patted down. We've been talking about that throughout the show. It is something you need to know about. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And it's not just a crush time because of Thanksgiving. It's the process itself. And those machines, regardless of the privacy issues or the health issues or just the process issues, the TSA needs to train their people better. They don't do it right now. And keep in mind, I'll give you one other tip for traveling, whether it's Thanksgiving or not. When you get to one of the security lines, I'm not even talking about the scanning machines or the magnetometer. I'm talking about putting your carry-on bags on that conveyor belt. Always look not at the length of the lines. It doesn't count. Look at who among the TSA, how many of those agents are watching those computer screens as the bags are going through the belt. If you see one man or one woman agent sitting there, that's the line you want to get on. I don't care how long that line is. That line could be out to Brazil. You get on that line. Because if you look at another line, there could be nobody in that line, but if you see two people looking at that computer screen, you know what that means? They're training that guy. One of those guys is in training, and that means every single bag will be stopped. And that's not pleasant at all, and you'll be there for hours. Not to mention the fact you then still have to go through the scanning machine. So take my advice and always look at the number of people who are monitoring those computers. And when is the TSA going to wake up and realize that the time to train these people is not at 8 o'clock in the morning and not at 5 o'clock in the afternoon? Do it at noon. Do it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Which brings me up to my next item up for bids on the prices, right? Airline scheduling. I'm going to be doing a piece on this later on CBS on the evening news because it's getting out of control. The other day I was at LaGuardia, and I picked a flight that left at 1 o'clock in the afternoon specifically because it's not a crunch time. We were still number 17 for takeoff. How did that happen? I'll tell you how it happened. If you go to any airport authority anywhere in the United States and say to them, I'm going to give you the scenario. It's a beautiful day. It is completely clear weather. There's no mechanical problem. There's no weather problem. There are no wind problems. There's no other air traffic control problems anywhere else in the hemisphere. How many airplanes can this airport handle in terms of takeoffs in a given hour on any given runway? And the answer is a no-brainer. The answer is 22, because you have to have at least 2.5 minutes of separation between takeoffs. All right, so now look, I failed math in high school, but I can do basic adding and subtracting. 22 in an hour, I get it. So why are the airlines allowed to schedule between 34 and 40 flights in an hour? And that's on a good day. This is delusional, absolutely delusional. We need rulemaking from the Department of Transportation that just basically says, we're not going to tell you where to fly, because that's the regulation. We're not going to tell you what planes to fly or how many of them to fly. We're just going to tell you that in that one-hour period, the airlines have 22 slots. And American can have 807, and United can have 811, and Delta can have 815. And we don't care whether you fly a Captain Skippy plane or a 747. It doesn't matter. We don't care where you fly it. We just know that that's what the runway's going to accommodate. And the airlines will, you know, they'll completely scream and yell, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Just like the airlines screamed and yelled when the Department of Transportation made the rule about delays. Remember that rule? It went into effect this past April. It said, if you're delayed on that tarmac and you don't return the passengers back to the gate within exactly 3 hours, you will be subject to a fine of up to $27,500 per passenger. Per passenger. A fully loaded 737 works out to about $4.3 million. Well, that was the wake-up call for the airlines. Now let's ask this, and they were screaming, this is wrong, we're going to cancel flights, we're not going to operate. Really? Well, it's been about 6 or 7 months since that thing went into effect. Let's go back and look at the numbers. How many planes have been delayed on the tarmac? How many fines have been paid? How about none? You know why? They returned to the gate. They have to figure it out. So we're not legislating anything, we're just doing rules that are honest, commonsensical rules that say, hey, after 3 hours you go back to the gate or you pay a penalty. Same thing with airline scheduling. I should not be number 17 for takeoff on a beautiful sunny day at LaGuardia at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when there's nobody out there, or should be nobody out there. It all gets down to delusional, ridiculous scheduling. And what people need to do is to start lobbying their elected representatives to have them lobby the Department of Transportation to make those rules. Because the airlines cannot self-regulate. We know this for a fact. I mean, every time the airlines say, let us handle it, they don't, and it gets worse. And interestingly enough, what have I been talking about on the show for weeks and weeks and weeks? The fact that the airlines have cut back the number of flights. They've cut back capacity. And I'm still number 17 for takeoff at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at LaGuardia? And we all know what happens then. When LaGuardia shuts down, it creeps across the country in a very rapid manner. There's no creeping at all. The rest of the country starts to shut down. This is not good. And, of course, last but not least, the best Christmas present we can give ourselves is high-speed rail on short-haul distances. On distances of under 400 miles, we should be putting in high-speed rail. Get rid of those Captain Skippy planes. They take as much radar space and gate space as a 747 anyway. And we will alleviate 80% of the delays in this country. I mean, maybe it means going back to the future. That's okay with me. I love high-speed rail when it works. And we don't have it in this country. But as fast as Acela goes on Amtrak, they go high-speed for about 30 miles. If they went for the 31st mile, they derail. So let's get working on that, okay? When we come back, lots more to get to from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica. We're only about 5.8 kilometers from Ocho Rios, about 82 kilometers from Montego Bay, very doable distances. And we're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, so we can solve it right on the air. If you've been watching the CBS Evening News or the early show in the last couple of days, you saw my special report and our exclusive interview with Mexican President Felipe Calderon about what's going on in Mexico, as well as my special report on the early show on all the new TSA scanning machines and the craziness that's happening out there at the airports. All of you who listen to this show right now, next week, I want you to call me and tell me what your experience was like going through the airports with those new machines. I want to hear great stories because I think that the TSA has got a public relations fiasco on its hands. We're all in favor. By the way, all the polling data suggests that we have an overwhelming support for better security. Well, why wouldn't we? That's great. We're not talking about the security itself. We're talking about the implementation of that security, and we need to do a better job. So email me or call me, and let's have a conversation about what you went through or maybe what you didn't go through and how those pat-downs either made your life or maybe you're now engaged to a TSA officer based on the pat-down. Let's go to the email. We got one from Terry in Vallejo, California. I am a disabled woman. I'm also obese. She says she's 300-plus pounds, and I would like to fly from Sacramento or Oakland to Asheville, North Carolina. I have not flown for probably 15 years, so I'm totally unfamiliar with air travel today. I cannot afford to pay for two seats. I have seen seatbelt extenders. Yes, well, here's the thing. Any airline carries with it on their planes seatbelt extenders, but that still doesn't get around the fact that you still have to be able to fit in one seat. If you can... and by the way, you can go to any website. The best one I would suggest is SeatGuru.com. That'll give you, for any airline you want to fly, the actual width of each seat in coach, as well as the pitch, which is basically how far it gets back and the separation between each seat in front of you. But if you can fit in that seat, then they'll give you a seatbelt extender. But keep in mind one thing, Terry, and this is a fact. The airlines are within their rights to deny you boarding if they think that your presence on that plane will constitute a safety risk for other passengers in the event of an evacuation or their ability to get around you if they have to get out of their seats. So, first of all, find out if you can fit in those seats. Every airplane will have a seatbelt extender. From Kay in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I want to travel to Tibet. How difficult is it to travel to these countries or Nepal? Which is the better of the two? Well, I'm a big fan of both of them, of course, Tibet and Nepal. It's not difficult to travel to any of those. Tibet, most of the people who go to Tibet go on organized tours. Nepal is a little bit easier to go to. In both cases, you keep in mind you'll be high up in the altitude, so you might want to just acclimatize yourself. And if you go to our website, we have an adventure travel section there that will give you a lot of resources in terms of each of those two destinations. And one from Gail in Arkansas. I'm not very well traveled, but extremely interested in animals and birds and want to be fairly warm and have 2 weeks late December, early January. Where's a good starting point? You ready? Mexico. You know why? It's great whale-watching season, and you have the monarch butterflies. Unbelievable. That's the time of the year to do it. And those two areas that I'm telling you about in terms of whale-watching and the butterflies, no security issues at all based on what you've seen on the television, even my reports on CBS News. You'll be perfectly safe. Switching gears because we are now perfectly safe in Jamaica in Dunn's River. We always have a segment called Ask the Locals, and my victim today is Jerome Thompson, who's a tour guide for Dunn's River Falls and Park. How are you, man?
I'm fine.
Now, I've done Dunn's River Falls. In fact, I did it with the Prime Minister and climbed them. That was kind of fun.
Should have been.
It was fun. A little slippery, though.
Well, that's why you have the guides to assist you up.
Oh, well, now you tell me. Now you tell me. What's the matter with you? But where we are, I mean, set the scene for me, Jerome. I mean, explain Dunn's River.
All right, well, it's the longest navigable waterfalls in the world, where you can actually, you start climbing at beach level, you go 960 feet up, you go in groups of, say, 20 persons per guide, you know, you do different activities going up.
And it's, give me an idea of what you do going up.
Oh, well, while we're going up, there are different things you do. We have, like, fallback, where you hold your lady, or if you're by yourself, you take a dunk in the water. Or you have, like, a water slide, a mini water slide. You stop and basically sing Jamaican folk songs, get some pictures.
Or you sing I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up.
Oh, yeah, yes, that too.
Okay, just double checking.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, and then we make our way all the way up to the end.
Right, and the waterfalls are not difficult.
Well, if you don't have a guide, then it can be a bit dangerous. But generally, most persons will be able to do it.
Now, a lot of people don't realize that for those people who saw the movie Cocktail,
yeah,
with Tom Cruise, they filmed it there.
Yes, they did. They a portion of the movie was actually filmed at Dunn's River.
Yeah, but the best one of all, of course, was Dr. No.
And Dr. No also.
Sean Connery.
Definitely, yeah.
The only James Bond in my
book. Yes, that is true. He's my favorite, too.
Of course. Tell me something that's not in the brochure that I will find out from you that I won't find in the brochure when I come here.
About Dunn's River?
Yeah.
Oh, well, definitely. What you would not find in the brochure is that it is, in fact, the number one attraction on the island. And I must say, all the...
Yeah, but I'm not going to go someplace just because it's number one. I want to go someplace because I have a number one experience. So tell me something that I'm going to experience there that's not going to tell me in the brochure. Meaning, is there a little cave that you know about or a separate little tributary that you know about?
Well, yes, but yes, they are. There are places that
yeah,
are on the
fault. I want you to tell me about them.
But usually, we wouldn't bring like an entire group there. If we have like honeymooners
or
things like that.
So if you want to, let's talk about
you.
Or let's say I'm make-believing that I'm a honeymoon couple all by myself, which, by the way, would be a total make-believe anyway. And I say, okay, Jerome, take me to that secret cave so I can make-believe I'm in love. Where am I going?
But there are places that are on the falls. It's 960 feet. So within that, within the tour itself.
So you can take me to that special place.
Yes, there are places that are off the beaten path, basically. So you can go there, you know, get some pictures, all that stuff.
What's the biggest surprise of Dunsinane for you?
The biggest surprise?
Yeah.
Well, for most persons that come, they don't actually know that they are going to be in the water climbing up. They think they're going to be like...
On a bridge watching.
On the bridge or along the sides or stuff like that. So when they come, they're like, whoa, we're going to be in, going all the way up. So that is good. Most persons are a bit intrigued, but then pretty much like a quarter way up, they're really into it, to get the whole just behind the thing.
Now, we call it Duns River, but there are actually four rivers, right? There's Cave River, there's Roaring River, what's Turtle River?
Turtle River, it's a river also. It's just a river, not really, it's just a name, Turtle River.
Any turtles in it?
Not that I've seen. I don't know, maybe they were there.
Well, they were hiding when you were there.
When they got
hiding.
The name, I don't know, but then no, not that I've seen.
Now, what about the iridescent water?
Well, guess what? You should actually... Well, you did it.
I'm asking you to tell me about it.
You did the tour, right?
Of course.
It is wonderful. It's wonderful for you, basically. So it gives you that oomph, basically.
At night?
Yes.
And what is it really? I mean, it's fish eggs, right?
Well, I think it's some... I'm not sure, really. I'm not sure.
You know what it is?
Eggs.
It's secret turtles. They escape the river. No? You don't like that idea?
I'll work with whatever you say. I think I'll go with your
idea. So I'll be the guide now?
Yes.
I'll take you to the secret turtle area.
Yeah, I'll work with your idea.
Now, we all know about Red Stripe.
Definitely.
Right? Red Stripe is a big part of Dunn's River because you're drinking it when you're growing up sometimes.
It's a big part of Jamaica overall. In Jamaica, we order a beer and you get a Red Stripe. If you say beer, you get a Red Stripe. If you want a Heineken, you have to ask for a Heineken.
If you say beer,
you say anywhere you go, you say give me a beer, they'll give you a Red Stripe.
And that's what you're gonna get.
That's what you're gonna get.
What about Appleton though?
Appleton is wonderful. Appleton, we have two major rums, Appleton and White Rum, which is overproof white rum. For Appleton, you have the Appleton Estate.
But the white rum is basically kerosene and fuel oil.
It's
come on, come
well,
on.
It blazes.
It's rocket fuel.
It's good. It's good. It's very good. You should take a few bottles with you.
Take a
very
few
good
bottles.
Very good in winter. Keeps you warm inside. Well, inside and out. Keeps you pretty warm.
You drink a bottle of that, you go right up the fall.
Definitely. You may fall off too, but it's okay.
But you're careful. You're not letting really people drink and go to the falls.
No. Well, guess what? Persons are on vacation, so it's not like you can actually monitor them drinking before they get there. But we do have set up rules there that we would encourage, things we would encourage you not to do before you go. Drinking is in fact one of them. You know, it's much safer if you're not intoxicated going up.
Not much safer if you're not intoxicated, period.
Well, true, but, you know, persons are on vacation, so it's up to you, really.
So basically, when they fall down the falls, you look at them and go, oh, they were on vacation.
No, we have first aid, and we also have an ambulance there, so persons are pretty safe.
So that's the truck call, they were on the vacation ambulance.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I just want to make sure we get the concept down here, Jerome. See, I'm getting you in trouble already. See, you're talking about Red Stripe and White Rum and an ambulance. I think they all go together. All right, Jerome Thompson, tour guide for Dunn's River Falls and Park, who's going to now take me as a honeymoon couple of one to the secret cave. We're going to find turtles if it kills me. We'll be right back.
All right.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis.
Thank you.
Believe us, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg with you, coming from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And I've been coming to Jamaica so long that when people come here, I remember a couple of years ago we were over in Rose Hall, and there's a Wyndham over there and a Ritz-Carlton over there, and we're all out to dinner one night, and somebody said to me, and they were doing a big kind of a catered dinner, and somebody said, no, you need to go somewhere else. And I said, where's that? He said, come with me. We get in the car, and we drive not very far, and all I can see is like smoke and a lot of cars and everybody local and a line and corrugated tin and more smoke. And I walk in, and that's when I discovered a place called Scotchy's. Great jerk chicken, pork, I mean, anything you can imagine. And here's the funny thing about it. The rest of my group, all my other friends who were journalists who were here, were sitting down for a catered dinner at the hotel. And we went out and bought as much stuff as we could from Scotchy's. They, of course, they wrap it in aluminum foil, and you get just big plates. And we show back up at the hotel. The hotel thought we were nuts. We show back up at the hotel with that, and it was like locusts. They all discovered Scotchy's that night. They never ate a thing the hotel served them. And that's when I realized, I got to come back here time and time again. And you can't get more local than Scotchy's. And joining me now, the founder and owner, Tony Rary. Hey, Tony.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Did I get that one right?
You got everything right, Jim.
Yeah. But the Scotchy's that I go to, right? I mean, first of all, I have to warn people. You can order the chicken or the pork or whatever you want, even fish. But don't take the hot sauce. It's going to kill you. Am I right? What's in that hot sauce?
Some people love hot sauce.
Some people end up in Jerome's ambulance, too. But I mean, you don't need the hot sauce because it's just so tasty.
Yeah, well, it's cooked with a certain amount, but not too much.
Okay, but now tell me the cooking process, because you're using a certain kind of wood. You're using it. And how did you start this? Because you didn't wake up one morning and say, I want to open a restaurant.
No, it's just that I went to live in Montego Bay, and jerk pork is one of my favorite things. There was no way to get it. So I started my own. And
you started cooking for yourself?
Yeah, and it started as a hobby on the side of the road, and it just kept on growing.
And finally somebody said, what do you do and open a restaurant?
Yes. So now we have three of them, so I'm building another.
And it's all very local. I mean, this is, you know, the one thing I will tell you about hotels in Jamaica is most people who come to resorts and hotels in Jamaica never leave the property. They may go out for a day tour or something, but they really always come home. And I always tell everybody, at least once when you're here, get out and get to a really authentic jerk chicken, jerk pork place, and that's Scotchy's.
Yeah, we got a lot of visitors.
How do you do the cooking, though? What kind of wood are you using?
Mostly sweet wood, but basically anything that's not bitter, we can use it. It's done over charcoals on top of, then the sticks on top of the charcoals and the meat on top of that, and we cover it with zinc sheet.
Like, yeah. Corrugated tin.
Corrugated, yeah.
It looks like an aluminum siding company went out of business. Yeah. You know this, right? I mean, it's,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
How long does it take to cook?
Chicken takes about an hour and 40. Pigs can take about up to 3 hours, 3.5 hours for a side.
Really? So that's slow cooking.
Yeah.
Do you marinate it?
Yeah, for a while. Yeah.
In what?
In sauce.
Nope, in sauce. Come on, help me out. In what?
Well, our sauce is 90% Scotch bonnet peppers. So, and then there are.
Okay, wait a second. It's 90% what?
Scotch bonnet peppers.
As I said, you don't need the spicy sauce. You're already marinating
that's
it in
right.
peppers.
Exactly. And that's why we don't put on too much when we're seasoning it or cooking it, because some people can't manage too much pepper. But the pepper is there. If you want more, you just add it.
Right.
So everyone can suit themselves.
And, of course, I learned something else. You know, we talked about Red Stripe. Mm-hmm. There's one more thing. Ting.
Ting. Yeah, it's a great drink.
It's basically Jamaican 7-Up.
Yeah, well, it's made from grapefruit.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's a great drink.
Yeah, but you know what? You don't really do Ting when you go to Scotchy's. You got to do the Red Stripe.
If you have Ting, you put some rum in it.
Oh, back to the rum again. Oh, jeez. With enough rum, everything's possible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
How much do you go through? I mean, where do you get all the meat? Is it all grown locally?
Everything is local. The only thing that we buy imported is the fish, because we can't get a steady supply of this type of fish that we want.
And what kind of fish?
We use actually a gray snapper fillet.
And that's coming from where?
Mostly Guyana and different places down in, you know.
So that comes in every day by boat?
It's imported by a supplier here.
Right. But all the chicken, all the pork?
The chicken and the pork and all the yam, the potato, the breadfruit, It's all local.
But no beef?
No. That's, we do it occasionally.
Occasionally, but that's a rarity, right?
Yes, it's so
you don't come to Jamaica to have beef.
No.
So all Americans who go to resorts and order cheeseburgers here, you're doing yourself a disservice.
No, we have very good beef in Jamaica.
I know that,
but
it's not what you, it's not what Jamaicans normally eat.
Jerk is Jamaican thing, and the pork and the chicken.
And when you marinate this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said the pigs take almost 3 hours. But how long do you marinate the pigs before you actually put them on the...
Yeah, sometimes from the night before or from the early morning and from all day.
Amazing. Well, I have to tell you, I cannot count. And by the way, you know this about me already. I've lost 68 pounds. I'm angry because I can't eat the pork anymore, and I don't eat the chicken.
No, remember.
But last time I was there, we had fish.
We don't eat. Good, but that's great.
That's right.
But we don't sell a lot of fat on the pork unless you want it, so it's not
I know, but I still don't. But, you know, just the smelling that knocks you out. It's so great. All right. Tony Rary, the founder, owner of Scotchy's. He's got three of them now. Of course, my favorite, right in Montego Bay, Freeway Close. When we come back, more from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica with, well, just more hot pepper sauce, too. Right back after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg with you from the Jewel Duns River Beach Resort in Jamaica. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. 888-88-PETER is the number. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. A few months ago, I was coming down here shooting a video in Jamaica, minding my own business, and somebody said, you know what, you got to go out and hang out with these guys. And I said, what do you mean hang out with these guys? I said, well, there's a Jamaican dog sled team. I said, what are you talking about? I'm still recovering from the Jamaican bobsled team. I mean, you know, in the Winter Olympics, you have a dog sled team? Oh, yeah, they run it every year in the Iditarod. I said, Jamaica's out of their minds. I mean, what is this all about? So I went out there and bumped into this guy, Damien Robb, and his guys out there in the middle of nowhere with all of their dogs. And I remember that day, there's no snow in Jamaica. There's no trail like that in Jamaica that you're going to go on ice or any kind of cold weather. He said, no, come on, hop in this little vehicle. And they attached the dogs. And it had been raining a couple of hours earlier. And the next thing you know, by the time we can, and these dogs take off. Man, we are just rolling. We are like tearing you know what. And by the time we come back, Damien Robb, what was I covered in?
Mud.
But you know what? That's how you train, right? You
have
to train the dog there.
Yeah, man. And no mud, no fun, right?
Well, a lot of mud. Okay. But here's my question. Why?
Actually, this was Mr. Danny Melville's idea, right? He was in Canada looking for dune buggies, which is a new tour for his operation, right? So when he went there looking at the dune buggies, he saw his friends working on a little rig, which was very much similar like the dune buggy, but it had no engine. So it was a little bit curious to find out what that was. So when he questioned his friend, why was building that cart? The guy told him that he was building it for one of his friends up in Aviemore, Scotland, because he does dry land dog sledding tour there. Now, this story took Mr. Melville by surprise because he never thought about dog sledding could be done where there's no snow, no huskies and such. So right there and then, he thought this would be an interesting tour for his operation, knowing that we have a lot of stray dogs here in Jamaica. So he think working with the shelter, that would be a great opportunity.
So all the dogs on this team are shelter dogs?
Yeah, 90% of these dogs are from the shelter.
Now, you know the old line, it's good to be the lead dog.
Yeah, it does.
It is definitely good to be the lead
dog.
Yeah,
man. We have a few shirts that said, lousy view if you're not the lead dog. So it's good to be the lead.
But you not only had to train the dogs, you had to train yourselves. I mean, how do you just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to go and explain the Iditarod? How many miles is that?
That's over 1,000 miles, like 1,100 miles.
How do you train for that? 11,000 miles in the total ice and snow in Jamaica.
Actually, we don't just train here in Jamaica. We get the opportunity to travel internationally. So we like meet other mushers, and you know, Lance Mackey is one of the Iditarod great champion, right? So Newton Marshall, who is my teammate, he actually go over ahead of time before the winter. So he actually acclimatized himself for the training, not only for the dogs.
Okay,
you know,
now I'm gonna stop you right there. Acclimatize a Jamaican to cold.
Well,
come on.
I would have to say it's more of a mind thing, right? You just have to have the courage. You have to have the mind to actually want to do it, right?
No, so, you have to be nuts.
No, not really. It's just the right word would be the determination.
How cold was it?
Actually, Newton have been in like 50 below zero before, so it's very cold, you know. So I don't know how he does it. Actually, I just been in like 30 below and I almost
freaked out. Oh, just 30 below, no problem.
Yeah, so no, it's a little bit of problem, right? But when you have the right clothing and the right equipment, you could get over it a little bit easier than when you're unprepared, right? But it really takes a lot of determination, though, because if you're not determined to do it, you're going out there and maybe halfway through, you're like, you just want to give up, right? So,
well, the really cool thing about the bobsled team and the dog sled team is in both cases, you finished.
Yeah, sure. And that's the most idea. You don't have to be first or second, but you just want to actually be able to go through with it. The determination will take you through, because you have a lot of mushers who've been doing the Iditarod for maybe 2-3 years and they never finish, right? And they are not Jamaicans. They've been in winter before, they've been in snow all the time and stuff, but maybe...
Okay, I got to ask you a question. In Jamaica, when somebody says, what do you do, and you say you're a musher, they don't know what the hell you're talking about.
No, they don't really. You have to explain what that means.
Long explain. And
yeah.
Then they still don't know what you're
and
doing.
And then they don't. They think, what's that really, you know?
But the really cool thing is, if you come down to Jamaica, you can go to your place, you'll hitch up the dog.
Sure.
You sit in that dune buggy, wear clothes you don't ever want to wear again.
Sure.
And boy, are you going to be covered in it, but it's great.
It is great. Because, you know, in the Caribbean, Jamaica is the only place you could do a dog sled ride with Chapa Caribbean, of course. So I think that's a really great stuff to do.
You got it. Damien Robb, we really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Jewel Duns River Resort and Spa in Jamaica. Peter Greenberg here with you, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. You know, we were talking about Scotchies before. That was one of my discoveries. And then other friends told me about another place, which is, you know, if you don't ask, you're never going to find it.
That's right.
Am I right?
That's correct.
You're right. But once you find it, you don't leave. It's called Miss T's Restaurant. And the owner, my friend Anna K. Tomlinson. Hey, Anna.
Hi, how are you doing? It's actually Miss T's Kitchen.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, but it's still a restaurant.
It's still a restaurant.
I know. Yeah. I just know it as Miss T, so we're in.
No problem.
And everybody calls it Miss T,
Everybody
right?
calls it Miss T.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it?
Yeah. It's actually in the heart of Otrios, directly across from the market. It's in the hustle and bustle and the noise.
And you know who told me how to find a bus driver?
Yeah, really.
Because he was going there.
Right.
Otherwise, I never would have found it.
Never would have found it.
I know.
Yeah.
And now, did you wake up one morning and say, I want to do this? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I love food. I love Jamaican food. You know, the fusions that we have, the ingredients, just the scotch bonnet, the pimento, the thyme, the scallion. I just love to cook. I love food and I love to eat. So I decided, why not do what I love to do?
Okay, but... You know, when you go to Scotchies, there's jerk chicken and jerk pork.
Mm-hmm.
You go beyond that, don't you?
Yeah, man.
And
Jamaicans, we love curry goat. We love oxtail.
Wait, stop. Curry goat?
Curried goat.
What is
curried goat? It's goat. In Jamaica, every day, I mean, even if people are eating chicken, they have to have curry goat gravy with their chicken and rice and peas. And it's just goat. We take mutton or lamb, which is really, we use local goat. And we cook it down with all our herbs and spices and curry.
Now, local goat here is very lean, isn't it?
It's not very fatty. It's quite bony, actually.
Yeah.
It's delicious. And we like to use ram goat because it has a very specific taste to it.
And
delicious.
Want to say that again?
Delicious.
Okay. But, I mean, most visitors here, mm-hmm. at least most of my fellow Americans, are not saying, hey, honey, let's go to Jamaica and have some goat.
No, they don't. But when they come to Miss T's, you'd be surprised. They want to try the curry goat. They want
to
try...
If they took all the initiative to get to Miss T's, then they're
going
to order the goat.
They're going to try the goat, and they're going to try the oxtail. And when they're done, they're going to say, wow, that was just absolutely amazing. You can't get anything like that anywhere in the world.
Okay,
come on.
Okay. How do you prepare the goat?
Well, we marinate it, like I say, with all the spices and herbs. As I say, we use scallion, thyme, scotch bonnet peppers, pimento, ginger, garlic, and curry. And we marinate it, and we just cook it down in a stew. And we also put a little French thyme. I spoke about fusion. In Jamaica, we use a lot of, you know, we like to use other stuff, like French thyme. I'll use a little cream sometimes, or just some coconut milk. And then sometimes I'll wrap that same curry goat in a roti and put some plantains, some ripe plantains, some nice arugula, some tomatoes, and some raisins, and wrap it up, and you got a nice curry goat wrap.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, if you're really lucky... You'll give me a tour of the barbecue pit?
Yeah, man, no, that's one thing about Miss T's. I mean, we're very open. We'll share it with you. You can see us making our sauces. You can tuck your head into the kitchen and see us working. We love to share. That's what food is all about.
What's the most unusual dish you make?
Ah, well, the most unusual and the one I love the most is what I call a swaggerific.
A what?
A swaggerific. At Miss T's, we try and name our meals according to Jamaican slangs. So swagger, you got your swagger on, it's good.
So
let me explain it to you. What we do is we get ackee and lobster, and we cook it down in the herbs and spices and our good authentic Jamaican curry. And then we drizzle that with a little coconut cream sauce, which we call a rundown sauce in Jamaica. We stuff it back into the lobster shell and serve it with some delicious rice and peas and some amazing salad, and you're good to go.
And that's called the swagger.
That's the swagger. Swaggerific.
Sounds like the Black Eyed Peas' new song.
There you go.
Next thing I have a boom, boom, pow.
Boom, boom.
See, I know.
You got it.
I know. Now, the one dish we haven't talked about yet mm-hmm. is dessert.
Ah, now you're talking.
Now, I know, I mean, there's bread pudding and there's toffee pudding.
Right.
Or sticky toffee pudding.
Right, and there's sweet potato. But one of the desserts that I love to do, I make a custard, like a flan. But I mix it with coconut milk, and then I make a nice caramel with white rum. Can't leave out the white rum. Real heavy white rum with sugar, and we drizzle it over that and serve it with some homemade ice cream. Yum, yum,
ooh.
Yum.
Ooh. Now, a number of restaurants will provide like a shuttle service from the hotels and stuff. How does somebody get to you? They just got to know somebody.
Right, they know somebody, and we also have a shuttle service.
You do?
Yeah, but that's what makes Miss T's unique. It's, you know, it's in the hustle and bustle, yet you don't know about it. And when you come out of the hustle and bustle, it's just a tropical haven. I mean, you can't believe that all that noise and traffic is out there, you know. And also, I have to mention our bathrooms.
Your
I don't
bathrooms.
Know if you've heard about the bathrooms, yes.
Oh, God. I'm a little worried about this. Go ahead.
Our wash basin is quite unorthodox. What we do is we use, you know, the Jamaican Dutch pot?
No, I don't.
Well, what it is, it's a cast iron pot, huge pot. And that's what we love to cook our food in because we believe it gives it this special flavor. So instead of
and
a regular
that's
wash
the wash basin,
basin
in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's the wash basin in the bathroom.
All right. So if the food doesn't get you, the wash basin will.
The wash basin, but the food will get you.
All right. Thanks again. Anna K. Tomlinson, owner of Miss T's. Miss T's Kitchen or Miss T's? In the meantime, we got to thank Efren Meza, Jessica Silverman, our producer here, Shelly Goncharowski out in Seattle, Andrew Jordan, Scott Robbins, and, of course, all the folks here at Jewel Dunn's River Beach Resort in Jamaica. That music means we're out of time. We'll see you guys from another location somewhere around the world next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.